Chapter 78 Prisoner and Pilgrims. Merrell gripped the bars of the prison wagon as it bounced along the uneven and newly repaired road up the canyon wall to the bridge at Echo Hold. So anxious was Ethan to get the person who he thought was the Shalane back to who he thought was Eldaloth that they had ridden through the night at great haste. Through the window on the left side of the cart, the rocky canyon wall slid by, and through the other window was a vertiginous and expansive view of the mountains in the late morning sunshine. While Merrell worried about what Ethan and Mikik would do to her once her true identity was revealed, she worried more for the Shalane. They rode hard, not only to get back to Mikik as expeditiously as possible, but to escape what Ethan's soldiers considered a leaderless, marauding band of Uyumak heading southwest toward their position. Merrell overheard no reports about the size of the Uyumak army, but Ethan's soldiers numbered near 6,000, and they fled before it like a deer would from a wolf. As she gazed upon the mountain scenery slipping by, she concluded that the journey, and her life, quickly approached their ends. Only one event would bring her satisfaction now. The moment that Ethan found out that the woman in the cart was not the precious Shalane he wished to present to Eldaloth, to heal the wound Jen had inflicted upon him. Ethan was dreadfully bad at enduring disappointment, and Merrell couldn't think of a disappointment more stinging than being duped by the First Mother of Rugarth on the most important mission of his life. The road smoothed out as they crested the canyon and started across the enormous bridge. Merrell smiled to see that the multinational force brought to fight at Echo Hold had all been marshalled to give the Shalane a warm welcome back to the fort and to the embrace of her god. Trumpets blared and shouts were raised, and Merrell played the part, waving out the barred windows as the soldiery applauded. Her real purpose, however, was to see if any of the dark guard she had placed within the Tolnorian ranks awaited her arrival. Captain Tolbrook had been among them, and if the church hadn't ferreted him out, he would no doubt come to her defence, if he were able. But the sea of faces was too vast, and the window too small for her to search, so she settled back onto the pillows. Time was short. She would face death with dignity. To calm herself, she searched back through her memory for the pleasant times she always called upon to soothe her when life turned dark. Raising her daughter, ruling a kingdom, and her pathetic, desperate flirting with Jen all served to cheer her in her moment of need. "If only I could have convinced him to marry me," she thought. Not winning Jen was her only real regret, besides not assassinating Shertan when she had the chance. The cart lurched to a halt, and the call to dismount and quarter the horses rang down the line. A large gate swung shut behind them, and Merrell heard Ethan's sharp voice outside the wagon. "We must get her to him immediately," he commanded. "Form a guard around me." The rear door of the wagon slid open, and a hurried but fawning Ethan waited. "Lady Cairn, we must not delay. You may rest from your journey later, unless Eldaloth rewards you with the wonders of Erelinda first." The voice-changing magic that Ethrys had worked upon her had long since worn off, and Merrell simply nodded and joined the Elderfair guard that Ethan had gathered to guard her. Their backs were to the keep of Echo Hold, rising square and high into the air. Before them the Hall of Echo Hold waited. It had been carved from the native rock, appearing as if two rectangular slabs of tan stone had leaned against one another and a recess had been chiselled away in the front. A short, fanning stairway led to a wide porch, three tall windows rising on the façade of the edifice. The doorway was shaped like a rectangle with a triangle on top, and new doors had recently been installed to replace those that had gone to rot. The door swung open, and Merrell frowned. The Church of the One had complete control of the structure. All the guards, elder fair, and all the attendants and administrators wearing the long robes and stoles of the church. The interior of the keep bore rich appointments of maroon cloth and silver, no doubt brought to Echo Hold before the brief sham of a war they had fought. One of the attendants approached. "We have prepared refreshment." "We have no time for refreshment," Ethan said. "We must end Eldaloth's pain immediately. Please inform him we are here with the Shalane and await his pleasure." The attendant slipped inside the interior double doors of the same size as the outer ones, returning a moment later and signalling them forward. Mirel swallowed. She hadn't seen Mikik before, as her daughter had, and was unsure of what to expect. As she entered, she nearly gasped. The hall was empty, save for a single commanding figure sitting on a new throne of polished dark wood, barely large enough to hold him. He wore a simple white robe and glowed with glory. Much taller than a man, he had upswept ears and deep, powerful eyes. All this majesty, however, was undermined by a slow trickle of golden blood, dripping from the throne and onto the floor to pool before him, crusting around the edges. He was in pain, his face registering discomfort, anger, and an incontrovertible will. It scared her, and she could no longer blame Aethon for his eagerness to please. They bowed as they entered, the door swinging shut behind them. Only she, Aethon, and two Elderfair had entered and awaited Mikik's pleasure. Torches added their light to narrow slits in the vertical walls. Above her, the two walls slanted upward to a point. Fresh wooden beams stretched across the top at regular intervals, three iron chandeliers hanging down. The candles were extinguished. "Rise and approach," came the command, the rich voice echoing through the stony hall with power. "Most holy Eldaloth," Aethon said, anxious and entreating, "I have brought to you the Shalane. She will heal the wound and free you of pain." They continued to approach, Mirel trembling. Mikik's searching gaze drilled through the veil and he stood, wincing with the effort. A fresh stream of blood poured away from the throne. A sudden force ripped into her mind and she staggered and fell, Mikik rummaging through her memories with brutal ease before releasing her. She gasped, working to stand. Aethon stooped to help her up. "Are you—"
"You are deceived, Aethon," Mikik boomed, returning to his throne and sitting heavily. "This is not the Shalane. This is her mother."
"No." Still unsteady, Mirel removed the heavy veil and threw it onto the floor. She drank in Aethon's horrified reaction, his face draining to white before blooming to red again. He gritted his teeth and slapped her with every ounce of strength his diminutive frame possessed, bloodying her mouth and snapping her head back.
"You meddlesome woman! You will pay for your crimes!"
Mirel wiped her mouth. "I don't think that is particularly fair, since we're all paying for yours."
"Where is she?" Aethon asked. "Where is the Shalane?"
"Let's see. I think you left her travelling south, being pursued by a large force of Mikik's creatures. So nice of you to warn Lord Kildan they were coming." "Oh, wait. You didn't, because you wouldn't have cared if we all were slaughtered. What would Eldaloth say about your behaviour?"
Aethon's face reddened.
"Eldaloth needs the Shalane! Now! Where is she?"
Mikik spoke.
"She travels to Rugoth and Mikmir. Mirel hopes her daughter will pen a letter explaining that she believes I am not Eldaloth. The Ilk has deceived them most thoroughly. It is well that he is dead. The sorrow this woman holds for his death is so strong, I almost pity her."
"She knew he was the Ilk and aided him anyway," Aethon reported. "She must be punished."
"Yes," Mikik replied. "She has believed the Shalane's Ilk distorted version of the events on the bridge. It is the grossest deception. It could not be foreseen, Aethon. You are to blame for nothing. But you are correct that this woman is guilty. She did not act blindly. She and the mage Aethrys knew who Jen was and ignored the warning of prophecy for their own ends. They have endangered the whole world. For while I bleed, I cannot protect my children as I have longed to do. Once this woman reigned in Rugoth with much power and skill, but she must be humbled now. We must act quickly to make an example of her. Have her flogged and burned immediately. A notice sent to all nations that she is dead for her crimes against Kihal. Aethrys must suffer the same fate, or he will work his poison upon the nations, and war will come again. But the Shalane must be recovered, so that I might undo the deceit that has been planted in her mind and speed her to her rest."
Mirel stood tall, staring Aethon down. "Is this the merciful Eldaloth we have praised every day of our lives, Aethon? If the Ilk has deceived me, shouldn't I be pitied rather than burned?"
Mikik rose again.
"What you did with your eyes open in the daylight. What I do must be done, though I take no pleasure in it. You were a queen. You know that examples must be made to maintain order in chaotic times. Mikik's forces run rampant throughout the land, and I haven't enough strength to fight them while I languish here in a pool of my own blood. The traitors among your race must die, or the disease the Ilk has infected you with will spread."
"Will you kill my daughter, Mikik, to keep the disease from spreading? It is she to whom Aldemar showed the vision of you slaying Eldaloth with a sword made from the blood of the Mikik Dun who died at your command. It is she that will start the fire that will burn you, and by harming me you will only make that fire hotter."
Aethon stepped forward.
"She is right in her judgment of the Shalane, holy Eldaloth. I have seen the girl's heart. If we kill Mirel, which I agree must be done, then the Shalane will not aid us willingly. She was completely deceived by the Ilk, almost to a greater degree than her mother. She will be angered beyond the power of reason to recover her if she knows her mother suffers."
"I can reclaim her, Aethon," Mikik said, "but she must come to me first. If we must delay this woman's death to secure the Shalane, then let it be so."
"It is wisdom for now. I will jail her. I will haste to Mikmir and bring the holy Shalane to you with as much speed as I can muster."
"I will not let you use me as bait, Aethon," Mirel hissed.
"You have no choice," Aethon returned. "Guards, bind her hand and foot and take her to the deepest cell, so she doesn't feel so alone. Put with her a few of the friends she tried to sneak into Echo Hold before the war. I was ready for that one, Mirel."
To the guards he said, "Do not be over-generous with her food and water. Tell the outer guard to prepare the carriage. We depart for Mikmir immediately, and I will need the full help of the council. Aethrys travels with the Shalane."
"I will smooth the road for you, my faithful servant," Mikik said,
and Mirel wondered what he meant. The two Elderfair grabbed her roughly and pushed her forward, Aethon striding out before them in as hurried a rush as he had when he entered. The guards led her back toward the keep, a fair number of Elderfair sneering at her in disgust as they unlocked a door in a squat building nearby. They paused to bind her hands and then forced her down a winding set of narrow stone steps into a haphazard catacomb with rough cells carved into the walls. Dirty, wretched prisoners behind newly restored metal bars winced at the sudden light of the Elderfair's torches. Mirel scanned their hollow faces for anyone she knew, but only strangers stared back. Once they reached the last in the long line of cells, they unlocked the iron door and tossed her inside, the cramped cell not even as big as the closet in her luxurious room in Mikmir.
"You tie her legs, and I'll get her friends," one of the guards said.
As the other bound her ankles with rough cords, Mirel tried to think why Aethon would bestow the gift of company upon her when he clearly wished to strip everything else away. But when the other soldier returned, face grim and carrying an armful of severed heads, she finally knew the depth of Aethon's cruel heart. With a sneer, he threw them in and closed the door. The light of the torch faded quickly. In its dwindling glow, she saw the decaying face of Captain Tolbrook, staring up at her in a rictus of pain, and she was thankful for the blessing of darkness, and a place where weeping was a natural part of the chorus of despair all around her. The sun had yet to rise as Jen walked softly down the hall toward the Shalane's room. Maywin had relayed to Gadeon that Amos would accompany him on his journey, Gadeon informing her in return that he would leave at first light and brook no delays. Jen wouldn't be late and was itching to leave. The uncertainty of Mirel's predicament tortured him all night, and, Like Cadean, his heart told him there wasn't a moment to lose. He quickened his steps, the old building creaking dreadfully with every footfall. When he rounded the corner to the hall where the Shalane was quartered, Dacen, groggy and a little bruised, was already looking in his direction. "There you are," her protector said, in an accusatory tone. "What were you doing with the Shalane last night? And what did you do to me?" Jen stopped.
"Keep your voice down, man. People are sleeping.
What the Shalane and I discussed is none of your concern, and what I did to you was this." And Jen did it again, incanting the same spell. Dacen collapsed, face first, into the wall opposite him, skidding down until he was an uncomfortable lump on the floor. Jen stepped over him and opened the Shalane's door quietly, entering the dark room where she still slept. The barest slivers of light from the pre-dawn sky leaked through the shutters. The Shalane was lying on her side, hair fanned out around her, face peaceful. As he sat on the bed, the wood squealed, and she stirred.
"There you are,"
she said dreamily, taking his hand and pulling him in beside her and snuggling into him.
"You are awfully forward."
"I must go,"
he said.
"Not yet."
He stroked her hair until her breathing slowed and deepened.
"I promise I'll come to you as quickly as I can," he whispered.
"I'll be waiting," she replied,
still sounding as if she frolicked in a dream. Jen leaned over and kissed her forehead and her cheek, her lips turning up in a smile. As he stood to go, he used Triss magic to create a thornless red rose and placed it on the bed next to her, drinking in her serene face before turning his own toward trouble. The trip, he hoped, would be short, as much because of his fear of leaving the Shalane unprotected as for a desire to be near her again. But he would not abandon Mirel to torture and death. He stepped back out into the hall and undid his spell on Dacen, leaving before the man could recover. As Jen rounded the corner, Dacen opened the Shalane's door to check on her, and the Shalane told him to go away. Cadean waited in the kitchen. He had put aside his dark guard uniform in favour of a plain shirt and woolen pants, and was hastily filling his bags with provisions from the larder. Jen tipped his hat to him and started stuffing his own bags.
"I ride fast," Cadean said. "You get behind, I'm not slowing."
"I understand," Jen replied.
Their road would lead them northwest, to the town of Embris, where a portal to Tenswater would put them near the portal that opened close to Echo Hold. Jen calculated a journey of 3 days to get to Echo Hold, worried they would not arrive soon enough. Jen knew enough of Aethon's drive and temper to fear him, and with his own magic and the mandates of Mikik, he was a force to be reckoned with. At the worst, Aethon would kill Mirel outright, though Cadean's brand only registered her physical discomfort for the moment. How long would Aethon delay her death? Jen thought the man had enough theatricality to stage something public and brutal to act as a reminder to everyone not to cross the church. That Aethon thought Eldaloth would actually condone the actions he had taken to protect Shirtan and would likely take to punish Mirel made Jen wonder if Aethon thought of Eldaloth at all, or only his own pride. Jen and Cadean galloped out of the manor on horses generously provided by Jeff. The morning skies were high and grey, but by midday they cleared. Jen feared that Cadean would recognize him on closer acquaintance, but the old faithful soldier was completely absorbed in his own thoughts and the mission at hand. Jen rode behind him at a discreet distance anyway. As Cadean promised, they rode hard, the animals laboring and frothing under the haste of their passing. This gave Jen the chance to use another trick of min magic that the Milim Eri had bestowed upon him, speaking with animals. The animals expectedly had little to say, but he found he could implant simple ideas such as urgency and need. Combined with a restorative touch of Duum magic to revive the horse's flagging energy, they crossed through the beautiful winding hills and valleys with such speed that they arrived in Embris just before midday, hours before they had intended. Their satisfaction at an early arrival was immediately crushed. A column of people stretched out of the town, a mismatched array of the young and old, rich and poor. The poor carried bags, while others rode in simple farm carts laden with their equipage. The rich leaned out of carriages to see how far back they were from the city gates. The elder fair, not Rugothian soldiers, patrolled the line, keeping order.
What are they doing in Rugarth? He wondered.
Excuse me,
Cadairn asked a plump man with similarly sized wife and children.
Is there a festival?
No, my good man, he answered brightly. We all make for the portal and Tenswater. We travel to see Echo Hold and the place where the last battle was fought. Cadairn swore.
It will take hours to get to the portal.
Here, yes, the merchant replied. In Tenswater they say it can take a couple of days. Are you well, friend? Cadairn didn't answer, angry face staring at the line as if deciding whether or not to kill them all.
I cannot delay!
We've all got to wait our turn, the merchant said, voice more subdued as Cadean's emotion rose. The guild doesn't play favourites.
We'll see about that.
Cadairn rode off at a fair clip toward the town, mood souring as they entered within the gates and found Embris, a chaotic, packed mess of Rugothians, trying to reach the portal or make money off of those who did. Jen thought the town had probably been pleasant once, but the reek of smoke and beer and sweat and garbage, combined with the constant roar of street hawkers and crying children, turned Embris into something like the Downed Quarter, only with nicer buildings. The long line of travellers disappeared into the wide, arched entry of a tall, domed building in the middle of town, the blue glow of the portal illuminating the faces of those relieved to at least be close. Those selling drink and food were doubly thick along the line, and Gadean's face took on a determined expression that Jen figured meant that violence was about to ensue.
Cadairn!
Jen yelled to pull him out of his dark scheming. He turned toward Jen, his face really considering him for the first time. Jen eased his horse closer so they could talk above the din.
Before you start threatening people, let me see if I can pay someone to take their place at the front, he said.
Do you have money?
He asked.
I have none.
I think I've got enough. Wait here.
They dismounted and Jen scanned the line for a likely prospect for his scheme. An impoverished farmer and his dirty brood seemed just the sort he needed. Jen approached and doffed his hat.
Good day, sir, he said.
Don't want nothing,
the farmer replied curtly.
I'm not selling, I'm buying. I'll give you 3 gold pieces for your place in line.
Suspicious, disbelieving eyes regarded him, measuring him up.
You ain't got it.
Jen reached inside his jacket and formed the money in his hand using Triss magic, extending it outward for the farmer to examine.
Think what you could do with it. Shoes, food, tools, a nice bonnet for the missus.
The farmer extended his hand and Jen pulled the money back.
Gotta see if it's real.
Jen took a piece and handed it to him. The farmer bit into the soft metal to test it and then examined it by closing one eye and squinting at it with the other.
Deal.
Jen motioned Cadairn over and, after relinquishing the money, they found themselves 12th in line behind an old farm cart crawling with cats and children.
You got enough to do the same in Tenswater?
Asked a considerably more relaxed Cadairn.
It'll cost more, I'm sure, Jen answered, but I'm pretty good at persuading people when I wish.
Oh, no. Looking down the line, Jen caught the farmer and his family chatting with a brace of elderfair and pointing in their direction. Cadairn followed his gaze and shook his head at the church soldiers.
Creepy little emasculated buggers.
Be calm or they'll get nervous, Jen counselled. Just let me do the talking.
The two church soldiers regarded them warily, and Jen figured they couldn't miss Cadairn's impressive physique and the sword strapped to his horse. And while Jen's outfit didn't scream, soldier, a trained eye would no doubt pick out the posture and musculature of a man familiar with a fight. The soldiers, both of them tall and thin, wore the conical helmets and blue cloaks of their order, hands on the hilts of their swords.
It is illegal to buy a place in line, one of the soldiers said. You'll need to head to the rear of the line, or depart the town entirely.
Jen decided to see just how much of a hassle the two were willing to go through to pursue justice for a petty crime.
We didn't buy a place in line, Jen said, acting offended.
The farmer says you did.
The elder fair returned.
I did no such thing, Jen lied.
He showed me the gold you paid him,
the elder fair retorted. No farmer would have that much gold. Do either of us look like someone who would have that much gold?
The soldier opened his mouth and shut it. A point won. He took another tack.
And I don't remember seeing you at this point of the line either.
Jen shrugged. I can hardly be responsible for what you remember. But look, the farmer there can clear up this entire matter. Just go fetch him and we'll have this resolved in no time. The farmer was 50 yards away, and they were now seventh in line, nearly to the opening of the portal building. The guard, a little flustered, finally managed to gather enough sense to do what Jen feared he would.
Well, we'll just ask the people behind you, then.
The person directly behind them was an old, bureaucratic-looking fellow who just wanted to be left alone. Jen caught his eye.
Excuse me, sir,
the guard said, voice exuding confidence now that he had finally found the trump card.
Have these two men been in front of you the whole time?
Jen created a gold piece and flashed it at the man surreptitiously. The fellow's eyebrows raised.
Yes, he said, the whole time.
Are you sure?
Positively.
The guards looked back at Jen and he folded his arms.
There. What further evidence do you need?
If you hurry, you might catch that farmer.
The two guards scowled and left, grumbling under their breath. Jen waited until they disappeared into the crowd before flipping the gold piece to their benefactor.
Thank you, sir.
The portal enclosure had no windows save for a circular opening in the very top. The brilliant blue of the shimmering portal provided ample illumination. The portal mage, sitting cross-legged on a decorative rug in meditative concentration to keep the portal open for long periods of time. Another man in the robes of Portal Guild sat at a table, recording the names of everyone who passed through in a ledger, and two elder fair were at attention on the edges of the portal. Jen and Cadean both lied about their names and their purpose, but if there were any suspicions, the frantic, busy pace of the day kept anyone from acting on them. They led the horses through the portal, emerging into a dry, warm day in Tenswater.
Unbelievable,
Cadean said, stunned by what he saw. While Embris teemed with people, Tenswater choked on them. The press of traffic along the streets almost prevented movement. Elderfair walked among the throng in large numbers, trying to keep the irritated crowd from brawling and stampeding. As it was, shoves and curses abounded. As in Embris, merchants took advantage of the influx of patrons by costing passers-by and inflating their prices, and every inn or tavern seemed fit to burst. Some people encamped in alleys and parks, and from what Jen could overhear, the entire mass of humanity was bound for Echo Hold. While they had expected a single column making for the portal entry, instead the ebb and flow of the crowd went in every direction. After some inquiries, they found that the church had instituted a system to control the numbers making for the portal. Every pilgrim had a mark stained on the back of his hand, a different mark for each day. The current mark was for 4 days out.
Can we forge them? Cadean asked.
I made some discreet inquiries, Jen answered. They apparently have a way to separate the fakes when you get to the portal. No one knows exactly how they do it.
We've got to try. I'm not waiting 4 days.
Agreed. As you may have heard, I have some talent with Duum magic. I may be able to use it to aid us here. But first we need to get a look at what we need to mimic.
It took them a solid hour to work their way through the crowd to the other end of Tenswater where the line of people waiting for the portal queued. The portal to Echo Hold waited below ground. Workers had dug a vertical hole downward, a spiralling ramp descending into the pit. The line waiting to enter the hole stretched a quarter mile back and was moving slowly. The elderfair patrolled thickly and Jen thought better of trying to buy his way to the front of the line again. Thankfully, those in the line kept staring at the stained marks on the backs of their hands, done in a reddish ink. Jen used his magical gifts to discolour the skin and create the mark on his and Cadean's hands just before the elderfair came to check them when they joined the end of the line. While they waited, Jen availed himself of the exorbitantly priced services of a hay cart, offering provision and drink for the horses.
Any news from Echo Hold?
Jen asked as the thin farmer pulled hay out of the wagon.
Those coming back say it's as packed as a barn on a wedding. Elderloth's made an open invitation to the nobles and warlords from any country to let them pass to Erelinda, like Shirtan did. Biggest rumour, though, is that they got the First Mother on trial before Elderloth himself. They say they'll probably execute her. Had lots of nobles show up today wanting to attend that, but I doubt any of them will make it through in time.
Jen glanced at Cadean, whose smouldering, far-off look portended trouble.
Despite the ridiculous amount he had already paid, Jen tossed the farmer a silver piece before turning back to his distressed friend.
"Once we get through the portal, it will still be 2 days' travel to Echo Hold,"
Cadean lamented.
"It will be too late."
"You don't know that," Jen consoled. "We'll ride quickly, just as before. I've been to Echo Hold, and I know a way we can bypass the crowd and get in without scrutiny. Keep faith, Cadean. We haven't lost yet."
The words calmed him, but the irritating, slow grind of the line only increased their anxiety. By the time they had descended the spiral ramp to the bottom, evening had fallen. As in Embris, the portal mage sat on a rug on the ground, while another member of the guild recorded names. A contingent of 10 Elderfair waited around the portal, and the rumours on the street proved true. Every person standing before the portal was forced to stick a stained hand into a bucket and have it examined by the Elderfair. Due to the odd lighting, Jen couldn't figure out what was happening after they dipped it in. To read the mind of the soldier performing the check would take physical contact, and without knowing what the final result of the hand dipping needed to be, he couldn't implant a suggestion either.
"What do we do?"
Cadean asked.
"We ride," Jen answered. "If we're not fast enough, we might find ourselves riding half a horse."
As they neared the Mark checking station, they mounted their horses, Cadean in the lead.
"Get down off there,"
one of the guards growled.
"Yah!"
Like arrows sprung from the bow, they shot into the blue field before them. Curses erupted around them, and the guards drew steel. Half a moment later, they emerged into a valley north of Echo Hold, a line of campfires and lanterns stretching before them. Their pace prevented manoeuvring, and they collided with a pack of riders that had gone through just before them. Horses reared and people fell, the dust churning in the firelight as the animals bumped and collided with one another. Jen and Cadean pulled their horses around and bolted out into the night just as the Elderfair from the other side of the portal burst through, yelling at anyone who would listen to detain them. Spurs to flanks, Jen and Cadean fled into the night without a glance back.